Hello there, my friends. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. This here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. We're talking about software piracy in the automotive arena with Ted Morocco from Silent today. But before we bring in Ted, you know it. You love it. It's time for a little news you may have missed. So, what if we could create electricity using motion from liquid metal? Oh yeah, and also use it underwater. Well, if a team of researchers from North Carolina State University have anything to do with it, we will. Because they have created a soft, stretchable device that actually converts movement into electricity. And yes, works in both dry and wet environments. The key part of this new energy harvester built by this team at North Carolina State University is a liquid metal alloy of gallium and indium. Now, this alloy is also encased in a very special hydrogel, which is an elastic, soft polymer that also includes water. Now, within that water in the hydrogel are dissolved salts called ions. So, a change in the metal alloy is created when those ions assemble on the surface of the metal. Now, when you increase the area of the metal, there is more attraction to a charge, and you see where I'm going, right? Here comes electricity, which is then captured by a wire attached to the device. The texture of the device is crucial here. Because it is soft, there are all sorts of motions that can create the mechanical motion needed to create electricity, like twisting, stretching, and squishing, which kind of sounds like the most fun. And get this, this hydrogel is stretchy enough to be extended up to 5 times its original length. So what kind of charge are we talking about here? Well, in testing these new stretchy energy harvesters, they found that only a few millimeters of deformation generated a power density of around 0.5 milliwatt per square meter. Oh yeah, and this stuff also works underwater. Professor Michael Dickey, author of the paper based on this work, says this: other technologies don't work well, if at all, in wet environments. This unique feature may enable applications from biomedical settings to athletic wear to marine environments. Plus, the device is simple to make. So, this team is looking at 2 paths forward right now. They're working at putting this technology to work in the wearable device market, and also possibly using this technology to harvest wave power from the ocean. Super cool, right? So if you want even more information about this soft, stretchable device that converts movement into energy, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in Ted Morocco, longtime friend of the show, to talk about software piracy. Let's go. Hi, Ted. Thank you so much for joining me.
Amelia, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Excellent. Okay, so we're talking about software piracy today. But Ted, before we get started, can you set the stage for us? What is the current state of software piracy today? And have things gotten better since we last spoke?
Well, I'm trying to remember when was the last time we spoke. And I think it was probably at the beginning of the pandemic. And at that point in time, things, I think, were getting substantially worse. So I guess the state of things today is that things are still at a heightened level, but I think it has gotten worse since about a year ago. But what we did see with the work from home movement and with the changes that took place as a consequence of the pandemic is that when people started working at home, we were able to track and monitor and visually see a very sharp uplift of anywhere from 30 to 40% more utilization of pirated software or counterfeit or cracked or unauthorized. You know, there's a whole gamut of different non-compliant kind of software that's out there, but it does constitute probably 4 in 10 users is somehow not compliant with the licensing provisions for a lot of the applications that are out there. And it's still a huge problem. So that's kind of the state of it today.
Okay, so we're also talking about the automotive industry in particular. So how do you see software piracy taking a role within the automotive industry? And why do you think this industry in particular is seeing growth for potential attacks?
Great question. Yeah. So, you know, first, just talking about the automobile industry and how it's really evolved since my first car was a 69 Plymouth Barracuda. And if you opened up the hood in that thing, it was pretty much all engine. And it was all mechanical. But today I have a Tesla. Yeah, I described it as kind of a rolling laptop. But one of the other people in the automotive industry said that's really not a fair assessment. He said it's not just a rolling laptop. It's really a rolling network of computers on wheels. And he pointed out that, you know, when you look at all of the different sensors, you know, we have sensors in the tires for tire pressure, and we have sensors in the windshield to detect when it's raining, and we have sensors to detect the light. All of those devices are basically IoT devices with MAC addresses and IP addresses, and they're all connected to a central, you know, computer within the car. And we're dealing with all of the complexity of different drivers, different versions of the software, different vulnerabilities and patches. And in the case of the Teslas, yeah, they do over-air updates, and you really can upgrade the entire vehicle through over-air patches. But most automobiles are not quite there yet, which opens up a door for a lot of, even with the over-air updates, there's still a lot of security vulnerabilities. But one of the ones that Cylent has always been aware of is the vast market of counterfeit software for automotive diagnostics. So we see their websites out there. It doesn't matter what vehicle you're driving. You can Google it and go to a website, and you can download software applications that are pirated that allow you to connect to the vehicle and to update, upload, change various diagnostic settings within the vehicle. And most of these counterfeit diagnostic applications are used by repair shops, but they definitely represent a pretty significant vulnerability for anybody who's interested in the automotive sector or anybody who really has a vehicle.
So, Ted, what can be done to take software piracy out of the driving seat? What step should we be taking as an industry as a whole?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are a limited number of answers. I mean, as an owner of a vehicle, I mean, the only thing that you really can do is to try to make sure that the software in your vehicle is kept up to date. If you want to make sure that you're not being exposed to a vulnerability, for example, auto theft is one of the areas where hackers can take advantage of security flaws in the vehicle. So key fobs is one of those things where there are mechanisms for detecting a key fob, amplifying the signal, and using it to open up the doors and to make off with the vehicle. So you want to get those patches and things updated. So when you bring your vehicle in for service, those are things you would like to make sure the dealership does, is that they download and patch known vulnerabilities. The manufacturers themselves, they could do a lot better, you know. So one of the things that I think is important is to make sure that anything that's downloaded over the air hasn't been tampered with. And in our dealings with different automotive manufacturers, there's a lot of security around that because, you know, if you were to download things that included spyware, malware, or whatever, tracking information, you know, there could be theft of data, there could be theft of personal data, there could be security issues as well. What if somebody's, you know, download software that allows them to track the location of your vehicle without your permission? So these are the kind of things that concern automotive manufacturers. It should concern automotive consumers. And the same kind of hygiene that we use on our laptops and on our cell phones, the same good practices of loading updates, loading patches, making sure that passwords are enabled and that security and encryption is turned on where those options are available are all positive things that people can do to try to prevent, you know, those kind of vulnerabilities from coming up.
That makes sense. Now, Ted, you guys have the 2021 Cylent Connect Software Monetization and Anti-Piracy Summit coming up soon. So, Ted, can you give me some details about this summit and what all will be covered?
Yeah. So this is an annual event. We've been doing it, I think, I'm not sure if it's 7 or 8 years now. Typically, it's always been an in-person event, but last year we went virtual. And this year, thanks to our Delta variants and Lambda variants and everything else that's going on, it will again be a virtual summit. What we do is we bring together some of the largest, most successful software companies, you know, in the world. And we gather for roundtable discussions on the technology, on the legal aspects, on the business solutions that can be put in place to try to protect intellectual property from counterfeiting and piracy. It's always a spirited event. It does address a lot of the things that are topical today: data privacy, data security, cybersecurity type issues. Competitiveness is certainly one of the things that has frequently been a topic at our summits, is that, you know, there is a lot of competition in the world, and certain nation states are more respectful of intellectual property rights than other nation states. And we have a lot of discussions about kind of what we need to do to try to level the playing field so that, you know, particularly some of the industries that we're very focused on is, you know, electrical engineering and mechanical engineering and chemical engineering. And we want to make sure that the technology sector is protected from unfair competition. So we do discuss the best practices for protecting intellectual property, for tracking IP, and for authenticating, you know, users of that IP, so that people who use counterfeit or pirated software don't have a competitive advantage over those people who are trying to develop products, you know, with respect for the intellectual property that is the enabler for the tech industry. So that's what's on the agenda. And this is coming up in October. Details are on our website. We will have a very good set of speakers. We'll have some spirited panel sessions and everything else. So looking forward to that.
Excellent. All right, Ted, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I haven't thrown you this question yet, so here we go. Now, we're all dealing, like you said, with one variant or another these days. We're all on lockdown on some level or another, and a lot of us can't get our favorite foods. So, Ted, if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, what would you have?
This is a layup, Amelia. I have a coworker who's in Europe, and he was just telling me that he was in Sicily, and I asked him where in Sicily, and he mentioned this. There's this very ancient town called Taormina, which is located between Catania and Messina on the east coast of Sicily. And yeah, Sicilian food is like nothing else. So I would take anything I could order from any restaurant in Taormina right now would be kind of on the agenda. If we could get that flown in, that would be fantastic.
I love it. That sounds absolutely delicious. And Ted, you always throw some pretty fun stories at me. So you have anything fun to share with me this time?
Well, I do. And because it's the fish fry, I thought this one would be particularly interesting. So I was trying to find some things that were going on in the cybersecurity space. And it turns out that a casino was recently hacked through a fish tank, of all things. So it was a nation state that attacked a casino. And the way that they did it is, you know, we hear about the IoT and we hear about this Internet of Things, and everything that you pretty much buy has some sort of Wi-Fi connection that you can connect it to your cell phone if you want. Now, why you need to do all of these things, I don't know. But apparently this casino had fish tanks, and they had a IoT device that would basically keep track of the temperature of the water to make sure that the fish were doing well, and it would monitor everything going on there, but it really didn't really take into account security. As many of these IoT devices are very low cost, so the security is kind of not taken advantage of. So this nation state was able to hack into a fish tank temperature sensor and get onto the network of the casino, and through that weakness in the security, they were able to access all the security cameras. They were able to access who the big rollers were. They were able to access financial information. It was all detected, and the whole thing, the whole house of cards came down. But I've heard a lot in the cybersecurity space, and I thought since the fish fry, the fish tank hack would be one of the ones that might be entertaining for your audience. Yes, listeners should beware when they buy that latest gadget on Amazon, when they're sitting home, you know, and they're isolated, and they download or they install some sort of app on their phone. Be careful. Always think about the security ramifications, because every one of these things wants access to your camera, Every one of them wants access to your contacts and your phone history and everything else. So it's a dangerous world out there, and we need to, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's when it comes to the security before we install things, even a fish tank sensor. So
indeed. Wow. Well, Ted, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me yet again.
Excellent. I love being on your show. Thank you, and have a wonderful weekend.
And before we go, don't forget to check out my brand new maker-themed monthly fish fry podcast series called Makers Today. In our third episode of this series, launched earlier last week, I chat with EE Journal's own Max Maxfield about how he got involved in electronic engineering, what motivates him to create the awesome designs he has developed, and why one piece of advice from his mother made all the difference in his life. And we will have a brand new episode of this series launching on September 23rd. And you won't want to miss that one. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EE Journal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EE Journal TFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out Amelia D. 1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. And 5 stars, please. Also, if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at Amelia, that's A-M-E-L-I-A, at eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 3rd, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.